You're listening to the NewChurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches,
I'm not going to do it this time.
I heard you breathing.
I was breathing, but I'm not going to interrupt you because we get complaints from the people.
The people. Yeah, New Churches is... I can't do this seriously anymore. It's an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you're going to find resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planning and multi-site experts to help you thrive. Go to newchurches.com and download the exclusive State of Church Planning Research Report for free.
My name is Daniel, you've said the same thing like eight times now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why not mix it up? Get something new. Get something different. Get a little. We need a little music. So that'd be awesome.
We do have music. If you have ever listened to the show.
I do. I listen to the show in this room. So there's music playing when we do these things?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
The sound of Nashville cars zooming in and out.
I like that.
Right on. Well, today, before we do our question, I did want to do a giveaway. And this giveaway today is for Tyler Sweat. I don't know. Anyways, he said practical and beneficial for newbies. He gave us a 5-star review.
Woo!
And this is what he said. I'm in my second month of youth ministry. Great insights for those new in the ministry.
How interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so someone in youth ministry is actually finding this beneficial. So nice. Right on. Well, thank you, Tyler. So send me an email and we will send you a Moleskine, New Churches Moleskine
notebook. So he has to actually listen. So he has to be listening to the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we don't claim this, we're going to give it away to somebody else next week.
Yeah. Today's question is from Thaddeus Williams.
Ooh, that's a cool name. You sure it's not Thaddeus?
Yeah, maybe it's Thaddeus.
But maybe that's Canadian pronunciation.
Yeah.
Because you're Canadian. I'm pretty sure it's Thaddeus.
Okay.
You'd have a Bible. Thaddeus. Isn't Thaddeus in the Bible?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, sorry. Let's go to Thaddeus.
Hey, guys. My name is Thaddeus Williams. I'm a student here at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, also the co-founder of Resurgent Ministries with a few other students, as we have a calling on our lives to become church planters. And also hope to become a sending organization partnering with local churches. My question today kind of deals with the cell church model. I know, Daniel, you are a proponent of the mid-sized community structure, but I was wondering, what are the best ways to go about establishing a small group structure within a church plant? And also, what's more difficult is establishing a small group structure within an established church. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate all the hard work you're doing. God bless.
Okay, you're right. It is Thaddeus. It's not Thaddeus.
I know, but I feel good about that. Maybe it's different in Canada. I don't want to judge. I just want to say I love the people of Canada.
Okay.
And you're a Canadian, so I just want to say that.
Well, your wife is Canadian, so you kind of have to
say
that.
There you go.
That.
That's true. I would say it either way.
All right. So what are the best ways to structure a small group in a church plant and in an established church? Well, you wrote a book.
Oh, I did write a book.
Called Transformational Groups.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, Eric Geiger and I co-wrote a book.
Yeah,
but it's a tricky thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about a church plant, you know, typically a church plant doesn't have the meeting space to go with a more traditional before church or Sunday school sort of model. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in my church, you know, we have two campuses. One campus meets in a movie theater. One campus has an established church building. So we could do small groups and I think we have a couple small groups who meet in our established church building that we acquired. But I mean, we just don't. So we have, we have small groups that meet in homes. That's our and a couple that meet in our building. I think Sunday morning, I think there are a couple. I think you need a structure that runs throughout the body of the church that everyone participates in. Some people say, you know, can it be a blended thing? Can we have a couple on campus or a bunch on campus and some off? I think you can, as long as it's the one structure. Mm-hmm. It's not we have small groups and we have Sunday school. I think you need a small groups plan. And you can have different expressions of that plan. But I think ultimately raising the value of that early on, I say to our life group leaders that there's no more important ministry in the life of our church than the life group ministry. I see them and I communicate that I see them as lay pastors. As a matter of fact, if we look at Ephesians 4, God has given some as apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, shepherds and teachers. I think that they are the closest thing to the New Testament model in our Western expression of church, because those were house churches then. And so if there's a shepherd teacher, it's probably going to be more like a life group leader today. But now in our churches, they tend to be larger than they were certainly in the New Testament. So I want to structure in such a way that they meet regularly. We tend to prefer weekly. Sometimes people take a break around the holidays or a short break in the summertime. We like to keep them open groups so anybody can come. We had Sunday after church, a couple talking after church to one of our campus pastors about, and I got to meet them, and about them getting involved in a small group. And so open groups, continuing engaging people, multiplying, you know, if they don't multiply after 18 months, we encourage people to consider maybe dissolving them or recreating them or something of that effect. So, structurally, I like them to focus on prayer, focus on community, focus on the word, and focus on fellowship, and then have some element of mission. So we had I lead a life group in my home, and we had ours last night, and there was a need in our group. And so we had maybe 10 minutes of teaching, maybe a little more, maybe 15 at the most. And mostly we heard from somebody who's hurting and prayed with them and encouraged and talked about how we could help through a situation. That's unusual. Usually we have a little more teaching. We have worship last night, you know, and here's the thing. People haven't led small groups in a while. I mean, a lot of this you can do online now. And so we had some worship together. What we do is we actually worship with the kids, and then we pray with the kids so the kids can see mom and dad worship together and pray. The kids then have an activity in the other room. My daughter helps with the kids in next door. And then we have some study. We have a lot of dialogue in that study and that conversation. Last night, we also planned our mission project coming up. We're doing a mission project. We want to be engaged in mission. Our small groups are not holding tanks from our worship service, but mission outposts of the gospel and the kingdom. So we laid out this plan to do a mission project. We have one of our leaders is still kind of laying that out and planning that finally. And also we planned a community time, a fellowship time, because those are all values of ours. So we sort of try to follow the 1-4-1 thing we wrote about in transformational groups. 6 weeks, over 6 weeks, we do a time of fellowship. That's 1-4, time of study in God's word, in community, in conversation. And then the other one, or the sixth, would be some sort of mission endeavor. But we want to encourage people to be on mission consistently. So I probably talk too much, Daniel, a general gist of how we might structure groups. Of course, we wrote a whole book called Transformational Groups that lays out a lot of that in detail.
Well, I mean, it kind of sounds like your small group is a church.
You know, I think it would be hard to make a theological case that it doesn't have church-like functions. Mm-hmm. Probably the difference is that when we look at the marks of a biblical church, I kind of write about, I've been writing a series on this, about there are six main marks. And I get, by the way, whenever we hear them series a number, they think of nine marks or something to that effect. Yeah. And a lot of that's overlap. And so, you know, so it's not a correction of somebody else, but a missiological thing that I started shaping as even when I was doing my PhD work in missiology. Mm-hmm. So I don't think a small group in our church has all the marks of a biblical church. Whereas our church as a whole does. Now I do think a small group of people who intentionally choose to be a church can have all the marks of a biblical church. And I think a lot of churches could. I mean, you could do the Lord's Supper in the groups, kind of in my theological view, under the blessing or under the practice of the church and its elders and its authority and the church's authority under the lordship of Christ. So I think you could do a lot of those things. But for example, we practice baptism as a celebration of the whole church. Mm-hmm. So that's not a life group function; that's a whole church function.
Yeah.
Now, generally, the Lord's Supper is a whole church function. Church discipline is a whole church function. So because of that, but we'd like to push as many of the functions of church life as we can to the outside, because it's more likely to be engaging in mission when people see themselves as a vibrant expression of a local church.
Yeah, when I was pastoring in Korea, and you know, cell church, you know, a lot of that blew up in Korea, and a lot of the theory was developed there. But the one thing that our church had done was they would have small groups or cell groups per the geography. You would be in a cell group based on where you live, but there would also be a pastor that would be geographically over that area that would shepherd those leaders. So for that church as well, they saw their cell groups as being a place where their people would get the majority of their shepherding and care in community.
Yeah, and I think people like Tony and Felicity Dale, who wrote Simply Church, or Neil Cole, or Wolfgang Simpson would say, let them loose, let them free, let them be the church. And I'd be perfectly comfortable with that. We'd send out a church I planted before this one. We sent out a small group as a house church, and they were functioning as a multiplying house church. So we're for all of those things. We'd like them to have the marks of a biblical church. In our church, and kind of as we feel Lord leading us, our leadership doesn't see them as freestanding churches, but as key outposts of the expression of the mission mission of our church, the mission of those individual Christians in their neighborhood and in their community.
Yeah, so as you build a structure for your small group ministry, whether it be in a brand new church plant or perhaps you're in an established church and you want to start small groups, the big thing, I mean, the 1-for-1 principle is a great one, but consider scalability. So if you think about starting small groups and you start them all on campus and you don't call them Sunday school anymore, you call it small groups, then think how that actually scales out. What if you run out of classroom space? What if you have a different location it's a rental space if you're a church plant? How do you do small groups in that sense? So always think of that scalability issue.
Yeah, I think that the issue has to be, and this becomes a challenge. I mean, the looser your building connection is, mm-hmm. the more intentional the looser your building connection is, the more intentional you have to be on keeping the structure, but letting it be free in the homes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You've got I'd say weekly reports, those sorts of things from your life group leaders. Mm-hmm. A Sunday school structure is basically less scalable, but easier to manage. You can go down the hallway and say, how you doing? What's going on?
Yeah.
So the end result is it just lays that out very, very clearly and very helpfully. So, and again, what we did, Transformational Church, not our book on transformational groups, but in Transformational Church, we found the majority of churches that had transformational, that kind of met the statistical criteria were actually Sunday school-based churches.
Okay.
No, I get that that's not trendy and cool, but the reality is that when you have a Sunday school, there's a higher percentage of people in your church who will tend to be involved in small group life, mm-hmm. though they will be involved at a lesser level of intimacy. That's sort of the trade-off.
Yeah, you're right.
So you can get 90% involved in a Sunday school before a church if you do it right, but then you got scalability challenges. But most people, the scalability challenges are only when things just break out and go crazy. So you can manage those.
And it's the environment difference as well.
It is an environment difference.
Relationally.
Right. No question. And so the environment difference creates a higher relational intentionality mm-hmm. in the home group. So there's a trade-off either way. Now, I will tell you, in my own practice, you know, every church I've planted uses home groups. So, I mean, that's my own practice. But I would say that statistically, we find that a lot of churches are doing a great job using Sunday school as well.
What I love about Dave and John Ferguson's book, Exponential, they talk about small groups as being on two categories or two ends of a spectrum. Are you going to be a group of missionaries or are you going to be a group with a mission? The beauty of having those two things is you can bring about to your group a question of, okay, guys, do we want to be a group where we all are reaching out into our own communities or into our own workplaces or our own neighborhoods, or do we want to be a group that's focused on a particular area or need or ministry?
Gosh, I mean, I want to be for both of those. Mm-hmm. You know, I think most groups would be part of their life function would be to be mission, to be on mission in their community.
Yeah.
So I like what Randy Frazee is doing at their church in San Antonio, which I can't remember the name. What's it? Oak Hills. Sorry, Randy. Please forgive me. And Max Lucado, please forgive me. Because I just preached there and I'm an idiot. So I guess too late. We can't edit that out. But anyway. Yeah. So, but at Oak Hills, they're trying to move in this intentional direction. Randy wrote The Connecting Church, which was very influential on some of the stuff we've looked at over the years. Or even Southeast Christian. We recently interviewed on The Exchange Kyle Alderman, mm-hmm. who they're doing the same thing. More and more churches are asking, how do we make our small groups geographically embedded in their neighborhoods to be on mission there? Yeah. However, I think there's a place to say there are purpose-based small groups. I think worship leadership can be a small group or small groups. I think those are involved in different aspects of the church life. So if that's what you're getting at, I want to create room in the structure for the normal thing should be kind of a reproducible and applicable for everybody everywhere.
Yeah.
That's the normal thing. That might be the vast majority of them. But then I'd have specialized groups. As long as the specialized groups don't become competitive to or replacement for the structured systems of small groups that you created in there. So you got a women's ministry, great. Nothing wrong with that. But it can't be more important than or take the place of your life group structure. Your life group structure could include a service group, but it's part of the life group structure. Women's ministries, men's ministries tend not to be, so they can't be competitive to what? There can be no more important ministry in the church than life groups.
And the reason why clarity on those issues are so important is because if you aren't clear about it, then your people are going to figure out, okay, well, they're going to wonder, what do I be a part of? Do I be a part of this and that, or what's more important? So unless you are clear about that in your structure, then that's going to translate into confusion.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. People, you know, then every person does what's right in his or her eyes. Yeah, yeah. So I think the necessity of laying that out. So I would have a structure and say that these are standard life groups and these are life service groups. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, they're still part of the structure that fits into the system as a whole. And again, it's not saying that there could be women's life groups, but the women's ministry is usually something that's different. And I shouldn't pick on women here. There can be men's life groups, mm-hmm. but the men's ministry or the men's discipleship group or the men's whatever men do in groups, that should not be competitive to, as that is, hunt and eat, I don't know. but just go right for the stereotype, Daniel. Maybe that's what you do in Canada.
Yeah.
But whatever that is, you just want to make sure that there is a small group system, that there's no more important ministry, I'm saying, not the most important thing in the church, mm-hmm. but there's no more important ministry than the ministry of the life groups.
Right on.
You have to be protected, guarded, and shepherded.
Yeah. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have a question about church planning, multi-site, or multiplication, just send it in at newchurches.com. If you are on your phone, then go to speakpipe.com/newchurches, and you can send a voicemail in that way as well. Thank you again for listening.